Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean. Hi, guys. Back here for part three, the final installment of 30 lessons that I've learned since turning 30. And I'm officially 30 now. Those last two episodes, I was just the baby age of 29. So I'm coming at you now with even more wisdom. And as much as I just wanted to dive right into this episode and knock out these last 10 lessons that I have, I just have to tell you the situation that I'm in right now. I think a lot of you guys will resonate. I believe, and in the conversations that I've had with many of you guys, I think we're all pretty similar in different ways, and you may not resonate, but I need to tell you my current situation. So we have known since last year that this year was going to be very, very, very busy with a trip to the Dominican Republic, Susie going on two trips to Utah. We have four total weddings. I have a brand partner retreat. It's just kind of chaos. Robbie has some work, like a work trip in Las Vegas, and it's really just back to back to back. And with September and October being the most overwhelming, we had my birthday, Hawthorne's birthday. Now we're going up to Virginia to spend time with Robbie's sister and her kids, and also see Wendy and her husband. And also the reason that we're going there is my cousin's wedding. I am a maid of honor. She's doing like, it's very, I don't want to say unconventional because it's just such a beautiful wedding that is very much her, but it's not the typical wedding where like I'm calling myself the maid of honor only because I'm making a speech, but another young woman who I love and have also known my whole life is also making a speech. She's not having anyone stand up with her in the wedding. There's no like bridesmaids matching outfits. So, but I'm sitting next to her at dinner and I'm doing a speech. So I'm like, I am the maid of honor. So that's this weekend. And then the following weekend, I'm going up to North Florida for a brand partner retreat trip that I planned with Brian and Wendy that we've been working on for months, which I am very excited about. The following weekend, I think Robbie is out of town in Las Vegas. And then we have October, I'm going to Utah for Young Living Silver Retreat. And then the weekend after that is my friend Hannah's wedding, who has been my friend since elementary school. And I don't know, the rest of October, I can't even think about. I can't even remember what's going on. But it is overwhelming to say the least. And that's just setting up my current situation. So I am someone who loves having a boring life. I love waking up every day and knowing exactly what to expect. I thrive in routine and structure. When I was getting ready to become a teacher, something that a lot of people told me was, I love being a teacher because every day is something new. And I was like, oh, that is not a win in my book. And that became very evident to me because as I started teaching and every day really was different and you never knew what to expect, I was like, damn, I would really just love to be an administrative assistant, doing monotonous tasks every day, walking into work, knowing exactly what to do, printing, copying, like entering numbers into a computer system and then leaving. And that's very much how I am now. So here we are approaching, we had Hawthorne. I've been banking my energy for all of our events the first week of September. So last week, banking my energy for preparing for Hawthorne's birthday and cooking for it and baking for it and decorating and cleaning and having all of our friends come over and then getting ready to go to Virginia like 5 days later. So I need to make sure I have all my ducks in a row. And I also wanted to give myself the space to relax and enjoy as well, because his birthday party was on my birthday, and I don't need a lot of fanfare for my birthday. I really like just sitting and asking myself every moment, like, okay, what do I want to do next? Very low key. So I wanted to give myself permission to do that instead of what I would usually do, which is, okay, Hawthorne's birthday's over. Sunday, I'm dedicating to work because Monday, Robbie's busy all day. Tuesday, we need to prep for our trip to Virginia. Wednesday, we're leaving for Virginia. But instead, I said, you know what, Susie, you deserve a day off. So I just spent Sunday on the couch watching Harry Potter and eating a ton of pumpkin cake and making fried chicken. Keep this in mind. So I have not done my traditional work that I usually do Monday today, except for this podcast. Sunday, yesterday, when I was treating myself. Saturday, because it was Hawthorne's birthday all day. Friday, because I was preparing for Hawthorne's birthday all day. So I already have this residual guilt in my head as I enter Sunday to Monday. And now I'm planning out my week. So we have Monday and Tuesday at home. Wednesday, we are driving up to Virginia. We're waking up at 4 a.m. We're on the road by 5, hopefully. So here's my plan. Monday, let's get it's just mundane stuff. So take care of Hawthorne in the morning, as I usually do, take him to swim, come back. Hawthorne goes down for nap time. I will use nap time is usually when Robbie and I are able to hand off and switch tasks. I will use the rest of the day to record my podcast, to edit a podcast, to do work, to follow up with prospects, to check in with my customers, to make some essential oil education content for my essential oil group, maybe make some content. And then Tuesday, Robbie is a lot more free than usual. So he will take the baby. I will spend the morning at a coffee shop, tie up some loose ends when it comes to work, and pack for me, pack for Hawthorne, write my maid of honor speech, get my nails done. And I had a podcast scheduled with somebody that I was really excited about to have on my podcast. This morning, we were met with, okay, we're not actually leaving for Virginia on Wednesday. We're leaving for Virginia on Tuesday. And so then all of my, which I'm excited for. I'm so excited to be in Virginia. I think the weather is going to be beautiful. I'm going to go on a hike. I can't wait to see my nieces and nephews. I can't wait to see my sister, Wendy. I can't wait to see my friend, Wendy. I can't wait to see my cousin get married. So the day started with, okay, like we can do that. I can adapt. But as the day went on, my anxiety and overwhelm increased. And in the morning, I was with Hawthorne and I got myself ready and we went to swim. And then I had to move my nail appointment that was tomorrow up to today. So I took him to swim, finished swim, brought him back home for Robbie to put him down for a nap, went immediately to my nail appointment, which I tried my darndest to enjoy and relax in because I've been not relaxed. Had to go to Target after to get Hawthorne some clothes because like all of his shirts have stains on them. And the outfit that we were going to wear to brunch after the wedding is not arriving until tomorrow because we didn't think we were leaving until Wednesday. And then I'm on my way home and it's already 4 p.m. And Hawthorne goes down to bed at 7 and I have to wake up at 4 a.m. tomorrow. So I would also ideally like to go to bed no later than 7:30, which means that in this ideally, in this 3-hour span of time, I need to record this podcast, pack for me, pack for Hawthorne, make myself dinner, put Hawthorne to bed, hopefully take a bath, do a hair mask and wash my hair, and get up all my ducks in a row so that I can wake up and pack and get on the road. And that was stressful. And I told Robbie this, and we have such a great relationship. I'm really grateful. I was just like, I'm really overwhelmed. I was coming home and I was like, I'm really overwhelmed. I have all this stuff to do. I need you to make me dinner. I need you. And I just gave him things to do, which took a little bit of the pressure off, but I'm definitely not going to bed at 7:30. And I came home and good news, my dress that I bought for the wedding arrived. And I was a little nervous about this. Like I said earlier, the dress was like totally up to me. I'm not standing in the wedding. There's like no color coordination, no bridesmaids nonsense. So the dress arrived. Thank God it arrived on time. But I was nervous because when you buy a dress online, what if it doesn't fit? And then you're fucked. Well, I put on the dress and it fit. Oh my gosh. Yay. Except I made a grave error that honestly I should know better by now. The model in the picture had no more than A plus or B minus boobies in terms of cup size, not in how good they were. I'm sure they are delightful boobies on a grading scale. I do not have those size boobies. So I put on this dress that fit, and I turned in the mirror and it was just boob everywhere. It was side boob. It was under boob. It was overflowing boob, and no matter how many times and ways I tried to adjust the boobs, it was not, it was, as my friend Colleen said, bazinga. And as Rachel said, oh my God. And as Brian said, wear that dress, girl. Oh, it sucks. It sucks because there are some just like simple joys. And one of those is wearing a brand new outfit that you feel beautiful in for a fun event instead of a dress that you've worn multiple times over and over and over again. And I couldn't do that. So I'm a little sad because that dress can definitely not make an appearance at a wedding. And maybe I could get away with it if I was just a guest at a wedding with someone I wasn't so close with. But like, I'm going to be standing up and making a speech. I'm going to be seen. My grandpa's going to be there. My Uncle Greg's going to be there. It's just so. Now we're sitting here. I'm a little bit less overwhelmed because I decided my body, my choice. I'm going to take my anxiety meds, which is helping a lot. And when it comes to anxiety in my brain, it just feels like a dust storm where today specifically, it's like everything that I have to do is just swirling around in my head and new things that I have to do just keep adding to the chaos. I think of it like a tornado or like a dust storm, and I can't catch any of them and bring them to the ground, and I can't take any of them and put them on a mental list in my brain. They're just all, it's just chaos. And when you have all of those thoughts swirling around like a dust storm, it's hard to see clearly. And since they're all spinning around, you can't work through them logically and figure out, okay, how am I going to mitigate my stress and not emphasize, but what's the opposite of mitigate? Litigate? No. And make the most of my time. So I took my meds and now it's like the dust has settled and I'm looking out into nature, and I see all of the tasks that I have to do written out, just like lying on the ground. And I can be like, okay, now you're all sitting down, and I can pick you up one by one, and there is space in between you, and I can handle this. So, thank you for listening to my current state of life. Let's hit up our last 10 lessons of 30 lessons that I've learned in turning 30. And we're starting off with a funny one. Always be nice. Now, sure, that's one we've always been taught. golden rule, always be nice. But this comes from a more sinister part of me, because you probably don't know this about me, but I'm like a petty bitch, and I will be the first one to say it. And it perhaps is part of my shadow. It is also a defense mechanism. The way that I was raised now we're getting into childhood trauma. The way that I was raised, and I'm not even going to go there. Okay. Always be nice. Why should we always be nice? Because I'm a petty bitch. Let me start over. It is easy to be nice to people that we like. It's easy to be nice to people that are nice to us. However, it is not easy to be nice to people who are being disrespectful, just straight out annoying stage five clingers. It's not easy to be nice to people who are condescending, who are disrespectful. And it's very easy in those situations to snap, say something mean, in my case, have a desire to put them in their place. But only bad things come from that. Both in, like, one, when we act out of that frustration and annoyance, the other person, it rarely has the outcome that we want. And two, when we react from that place in situations where it's difficult to be nice, then that other person has ammo. And in the future, if anything were to come up, they can always keep that in their back pocket and be like, well, you said this to me and you're an absolute dick and I'm going to blast you to the world. Now, maybe this is because I have a little bit more of a presence on social media than I did growing up. Maybe it's because I'm always planning ahead in order to protect myself because I have a lot of anxiety. Maybe it's because I wasn't a bullied kid, but I was different growing up and I was always kind of on the cusp and very insecure about my standing. So maybe it's because I'm always planning ahead because of that to keep my self-esteem in check. But here's the thing. When someone is being a dick to you, disrespectful, and you just respond by being really kind, then they feel like a dick. And then they're not expecting you to respond to their rudeness with genuine kindness. And so when you do, they're taken off and they're like, oh, wait, that was like, it puts them in their place. They're like, oh my God, that was a dick move, because it's the contrast and juxtaposition put right in front of them. Their dickness and your kindness. Second of all, if you're in a situation where someone is super annoying, you don't like them, you don't want to deal with them, and you just want to like vomit all of the reasons why they are doing things wrong, they are being psychopaths, whatever the case may be, but you stick to being kind or being just like straightforward and nice at the minimum, or respectful or cordial at the minimum, then in my opinion, what I'm always thinking of is, in the future, if this person who already doesn't like me, or I don't know, you never know people's intentions, there will always be either text message receipts, Instagram DM receipts, or verbal, like other people hearing your conversations, receipts that you were always kind, you were always cordial, you were always respectful. But for the other person, are they going to be able to say the same thing? No. So always be nice in order to protect yourself and in order to have the upper hand and in order to save yourself drama, because drama is just soul sucking, unless you're a Scorpio, and I know Scorpios love drama. I hope that made sense. this piece of advice obviously came from real life situations, so it's hard to explain without the specifics, but I trust that many of you listening will be able to apply those real life situations that you've probably had to yourself in something personal and see that if you had or when you did act in kindness instead of react, it benefited you tremendously. This happened when with ShotgunGate 2023, I posted on social media a video. I shotgun beers, guys. Like, that's my, I bite into a can, I shotgun a beer. It's feral, it's ridiculous. And I've done this since I was out of college. Like, that's kind of embarrassing. But at our, I had a dream that at the end of our wedding aisle, when we were walking back, I was going to shotgun a beer and we were going to have this iconic photo of me shotgunning a beer at the end of the wedding. And so I practiced for a long time before the wedding. And our practice shot was at our engagement shoot, shotgunning a beer in nature, beautiful. I was wearing a flower crown, hung up on a canvas in our house. Wedding, shotgun a beer at the end of the aisle, saved on a canvas hung up in our home. Then we tried to recreate it with my maternity shoot and I was chugging water and Robbie was shotgunning, but it didn't look that good. Then we wanted to recreate it with our Christmas pictures and maybe make it a family photo. Me shotgunning a beer, as I always do for big life events, and my baby. So I was shotgunning a beer and then I flashed the picture of our Christmas card and Hawthorne was in it. And people went wild. It went viral. I did not expect it to. People were saying that I had to be sent to CP, or I had to be called, CPS had to be called, and my child needed to be taken away. Because obviously having one beer in front of your child with a husband that's sober is child neglect. It was psycho. And people were saying awful, terrible things about me in the comments. And that's when I decided to take Hawthorne off the internet. And I was like, okay, I have an opportunity here. I can start responding to all of these comments and defending myself, which is what they want, or fighting back with them, which is what they want. And all that does is generate, like, add more juice to their fire, and they're going to keep going. And it sucks the energy out of me, because then I'm going to have to keep going back to these comments and seeing people continue to be rude to me in conversation threads. So I can do that, or I can ignore it, which I didn't really want to do because that doesn't say much about me. Or what I did was I started going through every message, and the ones that I caught, I would go on their Instagram profile. And if it was public, or if I could glean something from their Instagram bio, I would comment back something kind. Like, I distinctly remember someone saying something awful about me, and I had seen on their Instagram profile that they, with their child, made homemade ornaments with paper and cut out crafts. And I said, hey, I saw that you made Christmas tree ornaments with your child. Those look really great. I hope it was a lot of fun. It looked like it was a really great bonding activity for you and your kiddos. And I did the same thing with so many other people. And then I pinned a comment at the top of the thread for everyone seeing. For every time you see a mean comment, respond with a genuinely kind one. And what happens there is people either shut up because they realize they're being dicks when people are being kind to them. They double down and they continue to be dicks, which just makes them look worse to the general public. Or I even got a couple of messages of people apologizing and being like, this taught me a lesson to not make immediate assumptions on people about people on the internet. And sorry for being a dick to you. So always be nice. It will always serve you. I have a hard time believing you will regret being nice. Not to be confused with being a doormat, being walked over, having your boundaries crossed, but being nice, being kind, being cordial to someone, being respectful when you want to react instead, I think you will never regret that, because it nearly always allows you to have the upper hand energetically and emotionally. Next, become comfortable with pain. Feel it. One of the most important lessons I ever learned was in high school, I was a senior, and my high school was cool because we had a yoga class that we could take. And it was a year-long class with midterms, finals, grades, presentations. We learned the asanas. We learned the Sanskrit words. We learned how to lead a class, how to bring someone into a pose, how to make adjustments for different needs. We learned physiology. We learned a whole bunch about Eastern philosophies. We, as part of our final, was leading our class through a flow. And it was one of the sun salutations, but we didn't know which one it was on finals day. So we had to be prepared for all of them. And it was just very cool. And so as a part of that, obviously, it was every Monday was Meditation Monday, so I really was able to learn how to meditate through there. Tuesday through Thursday was a combination of actual yoga, where we would practice yoga, learn new poses, learn different types of yoga. So we might do a class, like a 30-minute class. It was hatha, a 30-minute class. It was vinyasa. A 30-minute class that was like power yoga, or a 30-minute class that was yin yoga, which is one of my favorites. And in this particular class, we were learning pigeon pose for the first time. And that is a pose in which you are in downward dog, you lift up your leg, you like your right leg, and you shift your weight forward to bring your knee, like, for example, you bring your right knee to your right elbow from downward dog, swing your right ankle to your left wrist, and then sit down on it, basically. So you're laying with your left leg straight back and your right leg at a 90-degree angle as much as you can, and like resting into it. And the first time someone does this ever in their lives, it is incredibly painful because we hold a lot of emotion, specifically stress, in our hips and our glutes, and that's all being released. And this is a stretch that you don't, this is a type of stretch for these muscles that you don't easily access on a day-to-day basis. So there's a lot of stored up stuff in there. And it's nearly overwhelming. But in yin, you hold poses for like 5 minutes each. And it's really, I distinctly remember being in this pose and being so uncomfortable. And our teacher, Miss Gross, I will always remember her. She's my favorite teacher. She also was my English teacher 2 years before. I attribute so much to her. And then she was my guidance counselor for college applications. She's incredible. Maybe I should get her on the podcast. She said something along the lines of, I'm going to butcher her words. These weren't her words. They were much more eloquent, but basically don't complain about the discomfort that you're in, because that's just going to make the people around you feel their discomfort even more. Try to keep your thoughts and your feelings about how you are physically feeling internal and explore them, and give everybody else in the classroom the opportunity to do the same for themselves. So it's very much being taught, take this physical pain that you're feeling and reflect on it internally. And from there, she taught us that the best way to get through pain was to feel it. So while we were sitting in this pose, feeling all of this discomfort, I don't know if she taught me this or I had tried to learn this. She probably taught me, but we became curious about the discomfort. Where was it? And I also learned this a lot when it came to like preparing for unmedicated home birth. Where was the pain located? What color would I give it? Direct your attention there and sit with it. Don't try to tense up, because when you're in these yoga poses, it can be very easy to like shift your weight one way so it's not all pressing down on one side. So it makes the pose a little easier to manage. Like, how can you breathe into this more deeply and feel the sensation spread through your body? And in doing this and in becoming comfortable with the physical pain started to go away. It started to dissipate. And this translates, and then obviously you get out of that pose. You usually, like, we were taught to go into Matsyendrasana. I don't know what the, like, fisherman's fish pose. I don't know what it's called in English. Matsyendrasana, and do a spinal twist. And it felt so glorious. And it doesn't feel that glorious if you're not fully leaning into the pose. And that translated into pain and discomfort, whether it's physical pain or any type of pain. If you're in a relationship and if you're going through a breakup, the best way to get through pain is to feel it. If you fail a big test or you totally flub at work, the best way to feel that pain and discomfort is the best way to get over it is to feel it. If you like, if you're, I don't know, you guys can come up with other situations, but pain wants to be felt. And the quicker that we can feel it, the quicker it's going to go away. The quicker we can become curious about it, the quicker we can become friends with it. Pain is communication to us. It is not bad. It hurts worse when we try to push it away. And what happens when we continually try to push pain and discomfort away is that it builds up over time to the point where your body can no longer handle it and it all spills over and then you have just like a mental breakdown. But if we can take these hurdles that life throws at us every day or every week or every month, and we can take that space in between identifying what the issue is and reacting and be like, I can react, I can push down, or I can feel it. The more we try to feel it, the more we're able to process the small things, the small inconveniences in our lives, so that when it comes to the big things, our natural instinct is to feel into it and overcome it with much more grace and much less trauma. So feel your pain and feel your discomfort and get comfortable with it. And the best thing that you can do is change your mindset around it to this pain and this discomfort is trying to communicate with me. How can I befriend it and listen to it in return? Next, money doesn't matter. These last 10 were just like totally, they sound so wild. Money doesn't matter. Obviously, caveat, money is important to make sure that you have all of your basic needs met. You have food, hopefully quality food available to you. You are not starving. You are protected medically. You have a safe place to dwell. We need material things. We need money for certain things. But beyond that, money doesn't matter. And this is a lesson that my mom ingrained in me at a young age that I'm very, very grateful for. It probably didn't serve her very well because she had a lot of credit card debt. But later in life, for me now, it's very important to me because money is complicated. We feel shameful about money. We feel shameful talking about money, most people. We feel shameful wanting more money. But we just have complicated relationships and complex relationships with money. But when my mom taught me these lessons, it would be either I lost something valuable that she had bought for me, or I ended up wasting my money on something that I didn't get a return on. And she would say, or she got her wallet stolen once, and she just said, you know what? It's just money, and money will come back. Money doesn't matter. What matters is that I'm with you. What matters is our safety. What matters is our relationship. What matters is who we are, basically. And so now when, and that also, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. And what I'm seeing come up again now around money, and I'm sure this is some type of like theme that's trying to press upon me something that I need to learn, is currently in my family, there are multiple, I hate that this is happening, multiple instances where my family members, and I'm not going to say who, it's distant and it's all over the place, family members are being torn apart over money, over who deserves what money, what is owed to me. This was mine in the will. This shouldn't be yours in the will. It's ruining relationships. It's tearing apart families. It's causing heartbreak. It's causing strife. And I look at these situations where families who were once in so much peace, or at much as much peace and harmony as they could be in with, you know, regular family drama, are not speaking to each other, where children and their elderly parents are arguing and causing the elderly parents so much discomfort and whatever over money, over wills, over what is owed to them, quote, owed to them. And my mom and I are just sitting back like, it's just money. And I also want to clarify with this situation, like all of these people, perfectly financially okay. Like nobody, I remember asking one person in particular, like, okay, if you were taken out of this will completely and you didn't get that money, whatever is owed to you in that will, would your life be over? Would you not be able to pay your bills? Is there some type of medical situation you're going through that you're not telling me about that you need to pay for and you need this money so desperately? No? Then why does it matter? It's not your money now. It is the money of the person who is disbursing it. And it is never worth ruining a familial relationship over money. And I'm so glad that my mom taught me that. Because I will never, I just cannot, I don't, never say never, but I cannot fathom ruining a relationship, a family relationship, a partnership, a friendship, anything over something so fleeting, something that we have put so much value on as money. And I'm also grateful that I'm in a safe and secure space financially, not living the life of luxury by any means, but enough to be like, okay, we're having a hard time this month. I'm not going to fret about it because money always comes back. And it's not worth losing presence and time and joy in our day with our son, with each other, with this beautiful house we have, with this beautiful nature we have around us. It's not worth stealing joy from that because our credit card is higher than normal. I trust that money always comes back. And I think I have a lot of, I think I do have a healthier than normal relationship with people or with money because of that. But money doesn't matter. And when it comes to work, money doesn't matter. If given the option to, I mean, I know I can be I was working a job that I was making a lot of money in, and I absolutely dreaded going into work every day. And then I was working a job where I was making less money, and I loved going into work every day. And sure, things were harder. The budget was a little bit tighter, but the more money I was making at the other job was absolutely not worth everything that came with it. So money is important to get your basic needs met, but make sure that you're not making money an idol. Make sure you're not making money or putting so much emphasis and power on money that it then has the power to destroy your mental health and destroy your relationships. Moving on, hope that made sense. I'm very passionate about this. Assume the best in people. And I think, am I going to cheat? Assume the best in people and always give people the benefit of the doubt. I hate that I can't think of a specific example for this right now, but you know, and I know, that we have either seen someone make a mistake, maybe at work, that's where it happens the most, seen someone make a mistake and assumed that they did not care about their job. They were reckless. They did not plan ahead. It is evident they do not have their, you know, they're incredibly disorganized. They're not prioritizing well and just gossip in the teacher planning room about this person that's always showing up to work late, never really knows what's going on, and always kind of frazzled dazzled. And is it really like taking control of their classroom and their kids are out of control? It's so easy for us to make quick assumptions, but I challenge you, and I still struggle with this, I challenge you to assume the best in people and always give people the benefit of the doubt. Because there have been way too many times when I have made an immediate judgment on someone based on their behavior, and then I later learned, for example, that person that was coming to work late, that was frazzled-dazzled, that never had their lesson plans ready, like maybe had undiagnosed ADHD that they later found out about, and were also dealing with multiple kids at home, and maybe they didn't have support at the time, so they were running to school to try to make it to work on time after dropping off three kids that have three different drop-off times, and were picking them up after school and were struggling to make lesson plans because they were taking care of their children, and then were trying to do lesson plans after their children went to sleep at like 8 p.m. And we know teachers like spend hours on grading and lesson plans. So maybe they were going to sleep at 11 or midnight and then waking up completely sleep deprived. Like, and the same thing has happened to us. People have assumed people have assumed things about me without knowing the full story. And if they had known the full story, they wouldn't be acting the way that they did. And this happens a lot with the fact that I'm woo-woo and Christian. People see two things and they automatically make a judgment and say that I'm like a heretic or whatever they want to say. And for that reason, I don't really post about like the coexistence of Christianity and spirituality because I can't deal with the assumptions. But people make these assumptions about me when they see such a small snapshot. And then when the one-off person decides to ask, will you explain this more to me? And I explain it to them. They're like, oh my God, that makes total sense. Of course, go off, girl. And also let me join your woo-woo bestie Facebook group. So the point is, and we've been told this so often, you never know what's going on in a person's life, ever, ever, ever. And even, I've been tested in this so much lately, even when we do feel like we know everything that we could possibly know about a person's life, and we can be like, yeah, there's like no excuses I can pull from, there is still something that you don't know that is preventing that it, and that is causing you to look down on people, to make judgments about people, to ridicule people and talk about people behind their backs. You get what I'm saying. And it's astounding how often, this is a lesson I'm still in the thick of learning, it's astounding how often I make an assumption about someone and then like 2 or 3 weeks later realize what was actually happening, what was actually driving that behavior, and be like, oh shit, I'm such a fucking dick. Why would I assume that of them? And yeah, okay. Always assume the best in people, because you want everybody to always assume the best in you and give you the benefit of the doubt, because most of the time, pretty much all of the time, we're all just trying our best. And if our best isn't up to your standards, that's a you problem. And if our best isn't up to the basic standards of like a workplace environment, there's likely something else going on that we don't know about. Next, being alone is a valuable skill. And this is one of the reasons why I love being an only child and growing up as an only child. I was alone all the time. And while there were moments where I was like, oh, I wish I had a sibling. I wish we could adopt. There was a little like small blip in time when my parents considered adopting, but they bought a boat instead. There were times when I like wanted to have people around me, but I learned how to entertain myself. I learned how to be alone without stimulation around me. I learned how to be alone with my thoughts. I learned how to just be alone with me and not care what other people thought about it. And I knew that this was an important lesson. I distinctly remember the moment when I went to college. I started in the summer, and I went to Santa Fe before I went to UF because I've been raised a Gator fan for my whole life. I always wanted to go to the University of Florida. When I was under the influence of God knows what, I gave a deposit to FSU because I did not get into UF, and quickly realized that was a mistake and decided, you know what, I'm just going to be in Gainesville. I'll go to community college for a year and transfer to UF and it'll be great. And while I love UF, and let me brag about myself a little, while I love UF, you should have accepted me the first time because I graduated with a 3.9 cum laude. Okay. Anyway, I remember one of my first weekends, I was up in college in Gainesville, and like the world was at my fingertips. And I had been up in that city so many times growing up. I already knew all of the coffee shops that I wanted to hit, all of the places that I wanted to explore. I wanted to just go on a drive and like see what other gems I could find. I didn't have any friends. Like I was living with my cousin, but the cousin who's getting married this weekend, but we largely didn't do everything together. And my friend called me. She had decided to go to TCC, Tallahassee. She later graduated from FSU. And she called me so distraught because she was alone and she didn't have any friends. And I was trying to help her. I was like, oh my gosh, you have your car. Like, why don't you drive around Tallahassee? Find all of the hidden gems. Why don't you like go to a coffee shop and read a book, or like Google best restaurants around you or best nature preserves and just explore? Like, you have a week and a half before classes start. Make the most of it. Get to know the place you're going to be living in for the next few years. And she was just flabbergasted that I would suggest doing anything alone. She could not do it alone. She could not do activities alone. And I realized she'd always been with someone. If it wasn't her older brother growing up to like accompany her to things, it was friends accompanying her to things. The thought of her going to a brunch spot alone and like reading a book was unfathomable. Or like, I'm like, go to the mall, go shopping, walk around the mall and just have like a mindless day. No, could not. And I was like, wow, she's got a lot to learn. And now I'm very grateful. And I've always been very grateful for this trait, because I see in a lot of adults, especially within the space of spirituality and mental health, a lot of adults struggling because they have never been alone, and they have purposely ensured that they would never be alone because they are scared of their thoughts and they are scared of what they will learn about themselves when they're in complete solitude and what their thoughts will tell them. And I'm not talking about like mental illness when you're alone and you're in like deep depression and telling, you know, your depression is telling you aggressive lies. I'm talking about like, what if I sit alone and I start to discover my deepest insecurities? What if I'm alone and I start to discover my biggest fears? What if I'm alone and I start to come up with the memories that I had from childhood that were deeply traumatic that I repressed? And all of these adults that were never able to face those in solitude or experience them before are having like a huge, they have a huge work set out for them to start unraveling that and start facing that. So I think that learning as soon as you can the value and beauty of being alone and befriending yourself and who you are and not judging who that person is and what that person wants to tell you is just invaluable. And I know for some people who can still like not fathom being alone, that is an incredibly scary thing. But as I said earlier, be comfortable with the uncomfortable and do those two in tandem. If you have trouble being alone, then get comfortable with being comfortable, be alone. And when those uncomfortable thoughts and realizations come up, feel them, explore them, and befriend them because they have something to teach you. Next. Wow, we're at 50 minutes. Look at me. I just can't stop yapping. The hard thing is usually the right thing. I think this can be pretty quick. When we are faced with a decision in conflict or in self-help or navigating life, like, the hard choice is usually the right one. Going out and speaking to your spouse and apologizing for something that you did, that's really hard. It's much easier to sweep it under the rug, but it's much better for your relationship to let go of your ego and your pride and to apologize. And something as simple as like getting out and going for a walk when you're feeling really depressed is really hard and seems like the hardest thing that you can do in the world and the last thing that you want to do, but it is the best thing that you can do for yourself. And sometimes, even people like me, the hardest thing sometimes is choosing to put down work that I have yet to finish and rest instead and do something mind-numbing. And that I sometimes like, are you kidding me? But that's the right thing. And that is what, that leaving work that is unfinished to relax and turn off my brain is the best for me, because if I end up being it gives me the emotional energy to be present with my family later. Going on that walk when you're feeling depressed is unfathomable. But it gives you the vitamin D and movement that releases all of those happy hormones that aren't going to pull you out of your depression, but are going to potentially make you feel, but are going to make you feel a little bit better and at least a little bit more productive. And doing something small that's productive when you're in the throes of depression is a huge win. Or like I said before, going out and apologizing to your spouse or addressing resentment that you've been holding towards them and having a conversation around it is hard, and it requires vulnerability and it requires setting aside your pride, but that's what's going to make you closer emotionally, and that's what's going to build a stronger foundation in your relationship. So the hard thing is usually the right thing, and the more often that we choose to do the hard thing, the easier it becomes. And because we will be doing the hard thing more often, things will begin to flourish around us. Our work will become easier. Our mental health will become better. our relationships will be, did I already say relationships? I forgot. Our relationships will become stronger. So make that something that you become comfortable with. I wrote down failure has a message, and I'm not sure what I meant by but I'm going to just guess. We're just going to wing it. Failure has a message. Oh, this probably has to do with the fact that one time I made a podcast called Could Our Goals Be Getting in the Way? Maybe change your thoughts around failure. Maybe failure doesn't mean that you are not good enough. Perhaps it means, hey, I'm making you fail because this is not the path you're supposed to be on. Please pause and reassess. Or failure could be pointing you to something inward. How are you feeling when you fail at something? Because I know that when I don't meet my business goals and I feel like I failed, it's not just that superficial feeling of I'm not good enough. It's I'm not providing enough for our family, which is still superficial. Dig a little deeper. What is this feeling of failure telling me? I feel like I'm not providing enough. That makes me feel like I feel like I'm not good enough. Well, why do I feel like I'm not good enough? Well, because I was raised, taught that in order to be good enough and valuable to the people in my life, I had to be providing them with something. Whether that was now in adulthood, that's partially financial, but whether that was providing them with entertainment and joy, providing them with positivity and advice, providing them with help on academic group projects, providing them with pride, like doing things that I didn't want to do so that someone else could have pride in me that they could brag about. So when we face failure, consider what it's trying to communicate to you. Is it communicating to you that maybe, yeah, you do need to do better? Maybe there is something that you, maybe you did cut a corner somewhere. Maybe there is a place where you can innovate, but is it also teaching you, like, maybe this failure is telling me that this isn't the right path for me? And maybe this failure is telling me there's something deeper I need to look toward inward, and working harder isn't necessarily the answer. Maybe working inward is the answer, and resolving whatever is at the root of that failure is going to ultimately lead to much more abundance and success. I don't know what happened there. I kind of blacked out. I'm not sure what I said, but I trust that it was esoteric and meaningful, because usually when I black out when I'm talking, it just means my throat chakra is open. It has a message to tell you. Okay. Always take responsibility. Oh, I wish I learned this sooner, because it makes it mitigates so much stress in your life. You make a mistake at work, don't throw it under the rug. Don't frizzle frazzle around and try to find a way to cover it up. Don't try to backtrack or blame it on someone else or do everything you can to make it look better. I have found, and this goes for not just work, but when you make mistakes, like with friends, when you make mistakes, God, if you're on social media and you make a mistake and you say something that doesn't sit right with a lot of people or offend someone, like, don't get into defense mode. Immediately take responsibility. When I was in the workplace, if I made a mistake, the best thing that I could do was go to my boss and be like, hey, I just fucked up. I want you to know these are the steps that I'm taking to fix it. But if you have a way to help me fix it, I would rather us do that together before the problem gets worse. Like, it's much better to make a mistake and immediately tell the person above you so that you can fix it together rather than make a mistake, try to fix it, push it under the rug, things get bigger, your boss finds out from someone else, you're in trouble, you get called in, and then it's just like a clusterfuck and you're stressed out and you're just like in deep water. Who knows? This actually also, in another theme, happened to me. And I will be the first to admit my mistakes. And I'm so happy to do so. Some of you might have seen this. Few months ago, a ad for a hometown ice cream shop of mine popped up, and it was clear that they had had some kind of partnership with a food influencer. I wouldn't call him that. And the acting as he was eating, trying these different dessert treats from this ice cream shop was so over the top, it irked me. It was like big ick, big pet peeve. Now, what could I have done? I could have said, oh my God, so annoying, rolled my eyes and moved on. But what did I do? I talked about how annoying that was, and then I posted the video on my stories where I have where I have tens of thousands of followers. And someone messaged me and said, basically, like, how I am, that you are not the person that I thought you were. How dare you take this young man and put him on your social media where you know you have a large following, make fun of him? Imagine if that was your own son. And immediately I said, I know that was a huge mistake and I'm really embarrassed about it. And as soon as I posted it, I regretted it. But now, like, the story's gone, so it's not like I can take it down. And I'm sorry that it offended you. I'm very embarrassed that I did that. I would never, you're right, that's completely out of character for me. And then she went on and was like, what if that was your son? How would you feel? And she kept spiraling kind of and calling me out on this. And I was finally like, I agree with you. This is a big shadow of mine that I've been working on. And I'm embarrassed and I'm working on it. And it's the result of me being bullied in school and being very caught up in what other people thought of me. And this is a defense mechanism. And that doesn't make it right. That is not an excuse, but it is an explanation for why I did this. And I want you to know that I'm actively working on it. And she was like, oh, I just assumed when I called you out on that, that you would get really defensive and want to fight me. And that's why I came at you pretty aggressively. And I was like, no, I agree with you. You are totally in the right. I will never be one to deny very obvious mistakes that I make. And previously in her previous messages, she was like, I'm unfollowing you because I don't want to follow someone with your energy. And I was like, if you want, I totally respect your decision to unfollow me. And, you know, I hope you have the best day ever. And I just respect that decision. You shouldn't have to have people in your feed that you don't agree with their energetics. And she was like, well, now I want to follow you again because now I realize that you are like so much more self-aware than a lot of people that I know and are willing to admit mistakes. And now I feel like a dick. Because I called you out without realizing, like making an assumption of you without knowing you and was coming at you like really aggressively when I didn't have to be. And I was like, yeah, well, it's okay. Like we're all human. Like we all do that. And that goes back to always assume the best in people. So the quicker that you can admit fault and admit mistakes, the better. Both for professional purposes to mitigate issues and also in interpersonal like situations where you can position yourself as someone who knows who they are and gain the respect of others because you're not someone who's trying to hide from your mistakes, but you're someone who's actively trying to fix them. And that can be an incredibly moving and powerful influence on other people. So always take responsibility, always tell the truth. Your most creative moments are born of solitude. Ah, ha, ha, ha. Yes. This one's very important to me. My main job is selling essential oils with Young Living. I'm an MLM girl. We've talked about this. And as part of that, I have individuals under me who are brand partners who are also selling Young Living essential oils. And I serve as a mentor to them, just as people above me serve as mentors to me. And in the beginning, I had a lot of brand partners that didn't have the social media platform I had, which, like, obviously a lot, like, that's not the norm. And didn't have the experience of creating content. The years of experience that I had creating content, they did not have. And as I saw them trying to create content on social media and sell on social media, even though that might not have been what their strength was, like, maybe it was much better for them to, I don't know, sell in person or whatever, I found that what they were doing was either copying me or copying other influencers in the essential oil space, which is not creative, obviously. And so when that was happening, I said, you know what? You need to put your blinders on. These other people in Young Living that are social media, that are like also influencers, they have great content and they should serve as expanders for you so that you don't feel shame about being a part of an MLM and you do see that there are men and women in here that are like super cool that you would totally hang out with that are not the weird stereotypical MLM person. And their content should inspire you. And it ends there. It should inspire you. But what you are posting should still be born of your, should still be encased in your personality and in your creativity. And this has happened to me too. I had a period where I wanted to test out and experiment a couple of things just a few months ago. And I was trying tactics that my successful friends in Young Living were doing that I wouldn't normally do, and different types of content that I normally wouldn't create. And those were like my two lowest months. And I felt so shitty about myself. And then I decided, you know what? I've been following these other people and trying to do what they do and taking their advice and experimenting, which is important and does have value. But I'm going to stop and I'm just going to get back to me. And so I stopped listening to their advice, though some of it did stick. And I stopped really watching like any type of content on social media, which I don't really do because I spend so much time on my phone anyway. The last thing I want to do is just like mindlessly doom scroll. But I stopped watching. And sure enough, I would be washing the dishes and a fun idea would come to me, a totally natural idea. And I'd be like, I'm going to record this. And I would record it, and it was totally unique and something that, I don't know, people hadn't really done or had done, but not with my spin. And it went really well, and people really resonated with it and made people laugh or made people relate to me. And now I'm seeing my brand partners do the same thing where they turn off their blind, they put on their blinders and they don't watch what other people are doing, but they take the time to sit in solitude and be like, okay, not watching any social media. I'm not taking the advice from other people. What do I like? What am I interested in? And as soon as they do that, the ideas just start popping like popcorn, people. And they are unique and they are encased in their personality and they're fun to watch and they're engaging. And this goes obviously outside of social media as well. Like in work, in lesson planning, in, like, if you're doing any type of creative endeavor, the worst thing that you can do is watch others obsessively, because then you unconsciously are end up copying them. And the best thing that you can do is just be with yourself and reflect on what's important to you and what, like, throughout the day, pay attention. What is something that you do throughout the day that is mundane but brings you joy? Film that. Talk about that. What is something that happens in your life regularly that is funny? Film that. do that. Like, I remember when I decided to give up doing the new moon and full moon rituals for Woo Woo Bestie, and the first idea that came out after that was the morning Woo Woo Bestie, the morning after, when she's collecting all of her crystals from outside. She's cleansing them. She's getting her moon water. Her husband's getting smoked up by the Palo Santo. And that did better than like any of my other full moon and new moon rituals, because I was going outside to get my crystals. And I was like, how funny of a scene is this to other people that are not like me? How funny is this to like Robbie and Robbie's friends? And that was a completely original idea that just popped into my head, and that was so me and that was so natural to me. So if you are in a creative endeavor, if that is part of your work, please spend some time alone. Reflect on what's important to you. Reflect on what brings you joy. Reflect on what you want to learn more about, and create from that space, from that untainted, uninfluenced space that is purely you. And from that place is what is going to attract people, because that is a pure energy infused into whatever you're doing, and people are attracted to pure, unapologetic energy coming from people. And we pick up on this too when we see someone acting like trying really hard, acting like someone that they're not. We pick up on that, and we're not attracted to that. But when we see someone out in public that is being unapologetically them, and is just big personality or like smaller personality, but has like a funny sense of humor or an odd sense of humor, whatever, when people just are themselves, we love that. And so in whatever work you're doing, the more that it is coming from an undiluted and unpolluted state of your soul, the more people will be attracted to that, because it's encased in a pure energy. We're almost done, you guys. Oh my gosh. Last one. Wow. Have I been yapping and rambling this episode? I hope you're listening to this while you're like on a long drive or doing chores around the house or on a really like long walk. Because there's a lot of talking going on, and hopefully some of it resonates. Last thing. Oh my gosh, this one's so funny. This is a perfect one. Accept compliments. It's okay to not be humble sometimes. This is a twofer. I want to start with my old babysitter, Kathleen. She was on my podcast. I didn't bring this up to her then, but this is an event that I vividly remember happening in my kitchen growing up that lives rent-free in my head. I was walking into the kitchen and, I think someone had said that I looked really cute. And I said, thank you. But I guess the way that I said it, or where Kathleen was standing, or where I was standing, or what food was probably in my mouth, it sounded like, I know. And Kathleen was just like, did you just say, I know? And I was so embarrassed. I'm like, oh my gosh, no, I said, thank you. Like, if someone says that I look cute, I'm not going to tell them, I know. That's rude. That makes me sound full of myself. You're not supposed to do that. And she said, you know what? Sometimes it is totally appropriate to respond to compliments like that with, I know. And that I giggled, and that stuck with me. And I think I tried it, like I tested it out a few times with my dad, which is ultimately part of where I learned this from. And he'd be like, Susie, you look so great. And be like, I know. And he's like, don't say that. You sound conceited. But, and you know, we're taught that all the time. Like, don't accept your compliments, and definitely don't own your compliments. And I think that's awful. That's really like telling our subconscious to diminish ourselves. And as I grew older, this kind of morphed. And I noticed, and people had talked about, and I became more aware of the fact that when someone was given a compliment, they would either downplay it. Oh my gosh, that dress looks so awesome on you. Oh, really? Are you sure? I was feeling really insecure in this before I came out, and it's like so old, and I got it off of like the sale rack at Target, and they just like shut down that compliment. Or they respond by saying, oh my gosh, thank you so much. That dress looks so cute on you too. And they just give a baseless compliment back that they don't actually mean, but really deflects them from accepting a compliment, or makes them feel like when someone gives them a compliment, they also have to give something in return. And as I noticed this happening more and more, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do the opposite, and I'm going to become comfortable with doing the opposite. And when someone tells me that my dress is really cute, or I look really beautiful, or my hair, it looks banging, I'm going to say, thank you so much, period, and end it there and accept it. Even if I don't agree with them, I'm just going to say thank you. I'm not going to reject that compliment. And going further, whenever someone gave me a compliment, I was not going to return it unless I meant it. Because I only want to give compliments to people that I actually mean deep down in my soul. And that was a part, like starting around the time when people started thinking that I was fake, because I quickly turned from people saying, oh my gosh, that dress looks so great on you, and me being like, oh my gosh, your hair looks so great, to me saying, wow, what a great choice in earrings. They really bring out the green in your eyes. or saying something like, you know, I want to pull you aside and just tell you that I really admire the fact that you are bold enough to introduce yourself to people that you have never met before, to make new friends and to make new people feel comfortable. And that's something that I want to be like. So my compliments became much more like sincere and made people uncomfortable. You know, I understand why, but it was because I give compliments because I mean them, and I give compliments because I want to uplift people. And I feel that it's disrespectful when I give that to someone almost as a gift, like, let me lift you up, and they immediately shoot it down. And even more than that, when I give someone a compliment, I would much prefer that they say, thank you so much, that means a lot, instead of just giving me a baseless, surface level, empty compliment back to fill the space. And sometimes it's okay when someone gives you a compliment to say, I know. It's okay to be conceited sometimes. You don't always have to be humble. I've loved diving into this, and this is a little bit more of a recent development. And I think everybody should do this. Everybody, like, seriously, we all have so many gifts, and I think we should start to own them. Like, I get a lot of DMs from people that say, wow, you're like really, I really admire the way that you're so authentic on social media. And I really admire that you talk about your mental health so openly, or you are really good at just being yourself in front of the camera. And I say, I know, like, I am really good at that. Or people say, you give me such good advice. You are like wise beyond your years. You really take the time to like analyze how you feel and take personal responsibility and accountability for things. And I admire that about you. And I really want to do that. And I'm like, thanks. I know. I worked hard to become that person. Thanks for the compliment. I know this about myself. Thank you for confirming it. And it's a little bit of a quirk now that people expect from me. But seriously, you're not conceited for acknowledging your gifts. Can you please lean into your gifts? Can you please say thank you to compliments and then not follow up with a baseless compliment from someone for someone? Can you please, and this is going to be really uncomfortable in our society, but when someone points out a gift that you have, that you know you have, especially one that you've worked hard to perfect, please say, thank you, I know. And if, thank you, I know that's one of my, that is one of my gifts, it's one of my strengths, and I've worked really hard on it, and I really appreciate that you see that in me. Do it. That's your challenge for the week. We've been here for over an hour, and damn, I'm really good at yapping, and that must be why I'm really good at podcasts, and that's why you need to send this podcast to other people so more people listen to it, because if I will accept any compliment, it is one that I got recently from Wendy. She doesn't really listen to my podcast, but she listens to one. She's like, you're really good at interviewing people. You're really good at having conversations with people. And I was like, yeah, I know. Why aren't I getting more listens on my podcast episodes? So send any of my podcasts to your friends. Take 30 seconds out of your day to rate my podcast 5 stars. If you're listening to this podcast right now, take a screenshot, put it on your story, leave a link to my podcast, tag me in it. I will repost it. Oh, and if you're a little bit woo-woo, a little bit spiritual, don't forget to join our Woo-Woo Bestie Facebook page for a beautiful, non-judgmental, full of knowledge, full of wisdom community of people. The link is in the show notes. Thank you for listening to me and my 30 lessons in my last 30 years. You will get another episode on Friday that I will be editing on my drive tomorrow. And hopefully the person that I had to cancel on that I was really excited about will be okay with rescheduling with me. But I have some dope ass people coming on the pod. I hope you guys have the best day ever. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of this Woo Woo Bestie squad and being on this journey with me. Bye! I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at woowoobestie_Susie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the Woo Woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.